Speaking on steps. I was going to say 11, 12, and 13. It's really not, I'm sorry. It's the end of the semester. Howard's not going to do that. And his name, and this is Howard. He's not from Flemington.
Yeah. Can you hear me in the back? Good. My name is Howard. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Howard.
I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be sober. And my home group is the Monday Night Into Action Big Book Meeting in Berkeley Heights, New Jersey. I heard this little story that I want to share with you about this guy, probably alcoholic, who made his living by breaking and entering homes. And one day, he had woken up, and he was in his cups, and he didn't have a cent in his pocket, and he needed a drink, and he was feeling terrible. So he got himself out of the house, and was walking around a new neighborhood, and started to case houses along the way. And he finally found a house that he felt he could break into without any consequences. And he went to the back of this house, and he had a knack of entering a house without doing too much damage, and he did so. And he took his little flashlight out, and he started looking around the area. And he came into one room that had a cabinet that looked familiar to him. And within this cabinet, there was a safe. And he gets down on his knees. He wasn't praying now. He gets down on his knees, and he had that little flashlight in his mouth, and he was trying to trick that combination. And he hears this little voice that says, "Jesus is watching you." And he just takes a look for a second, and he says, "Nah," he says, "that can't be." He goes back to that combination, and he starts to play with it a little bit more. And he hears that voice say, "Jesus is looking at you." Then he says, "Wow, I'm really hearing this." And he stands up and he looks about the room and he sees this huge ornate birdcage. And as he's walking toward the birdcage, he hears this bird say, "Jesus is going to get you." And he says to himself, "The heck with that little voice." And as he's walking back, he sees this huge German Shepherd. And this German Shepherd has his fangs protruding, saliva is dripping, and he hears that little voice say, "Sick him, Jesus." Now, just like myself, I've had warnings all over the place. I never, ever pay heed. Never pay heed. I just want to say it's been a joy being here for the last 4 weeks, sharing some of my experience, strength, and hope. And I'm very grateful that I had this opportunity, because it's the first time that I've been in a setting like this. And I just hope that the people who have been attending this meeting can get some hope that if somebody who was as hopeless and depraved as I was can have an about face and an awakening and hopefully be useful. So I hope that you do get some hope from that. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard people say that they were bankrupt physically, mentally, and spiritually. And although I could identify with some of that, I really couldn't comprehend what they meant. I knew that I was bankrupt mentally because I felt like my brain was fried like an egg in a pan. I mean, I used to see like dots in front of me, and there were no such thing. I mean, I was really pretty far gone, I believe. And physically, I was also in a very debilitated state. I was underweight. I was jaundiced. I mean, I was really a sick man. But the spiritual thing, I never really could comprehend that. To me, a spiritual person was the Dalai Lama or somebody who was wearing a habit, something like that. I could never comprehend a human being being spiritual unless they were devoted to God, usually by religion. But I said, you know, I guess that I'm spiritually banked up also. So now the thing is, how do I get out of chapter 11? That was my thing. How do I change this? Well, as I began to think, in step one, I admitted for the first time that I was powerless over alcohol. I was smitten by this insane urge to drink. Our book calls it an obsession. And once I ingested the alcohol, I triggered something inside of me that was very different from the experience of 90% of the people on the face of this earth. Once I ingested that alcohol, a craving ensued, an insatiable desire for more alcohol, and I couldn't stop. I also had this thing called the spiritual malady, in which I was effectively blocked off from God. It's like a man who is deaf. I could not hear God's power, God's love, God's way of life. I was officially removed from that. But because of my powerlessness, I finally found out what my problem was. I saw the need for the power, greater than ourselves, as my solution. So what I did is I came to believe that if you guys are getting well by believing in this process, by believing in a power greater than yourself, and I could identify with your experiences, then if it could work for you, possibly it could work for me. And to me, that's what believing is. It's upfront information. It's the possibility, yes, this can work for me. And based on that belief, I had really only one alternative. I didn't want to go back to the horrific life that I led, the insanity of alcohol. So I did accept spiritual help. And I made my decision in step three to let God direct my thinking. That beautiful, beautiful couple of sentences, that He is my director. He is the father, I am his child. He is the principal, I am his agent. I made that decision. And once I made that decision, a miraculous thing happened. I started to feel a little bit better. My book says I feel new power flow in. I just admitted I'm powerless over alcohol, and yet I'm making a decision, and I'm feeling new power flow in. And it reminds me, I'd be sick in the morning and I'd have this ping pong match in my head. Take a drink, you can't take a drink, it's killing you. Take a drink, you can't take a drink. Take a drink, you can't take a drink. Our book calls that a queer mental phenomenon. I love those words that Bill uses. An amazing thing happened. Once I decided to take the drink, I wasn't as sick as I was before I decided to take the drink. So just by making that decision to imbibe, I began to feel a little bit better. Making that decision to let God direct my thinking, I began to feel a little bit better. I got enough power within me where I could begin to look at what my real problem is, myself. In step four, I began to look at my thinking. And then I realized that my thinking is my problem. Not the world and its people, not the alcohol, but it's my thinking. Because it's my thinking that gave my body permission to pick up the drinking. It's my thinking that creates my actions that got me into all kinds of trouble. I never ever realized that before, because I was so busy looking at what you did to me that I couldn't see that it was my actions that created that to begin with. So I began to see that I'm my problem. And I shared this information with another human being and God. It was easy to share it with God because I couldn't get the feedback. But that was insufficient. That was lacking humility. So I shared it with another human being, and there was a little relief with that. Because there's an implication that if I'm sharing it with another human being, that I'm a human being also. And for many, many years, I didn't believe I was a human being. I always thought I was less than, primarily because that's what people told me. I was not a very pleasant man, I can assure you that. After sharing this information with another human being, I began to see my truth. I began to see the exact nature of my wrongs. The wrongs, the things I've done incorrectly, are what block me off from God. But just knowing that is not sufficient. Because just by knowing that, even if I rid those wrongs, they're going to come back again. Because I'm not removing the exact nature of the wrong, the root, the thinking that created the wrong to begin with. I began to see that it was my defective thinking that created the actions that put me in a position to be resentful, to be fearful, to harm people. When I began to see it was my thinking, I became willing to have God remove these things that became objectionable to me. I no longer wanted to be that person. And in step 7, humbly on my knees, I asked God to remove these character defects, holding nothing back. Now, the first time I did this, as I share previously, I said the 7-step prayer, and I thought that was it. And very shortly thereafter, I got into legal trouble because God did not remove my shoplifting like I thought he was going to do that. At the same time that I asked God to remove, I have to remember that these are the steps that I took, not God. And I believe that God is doing all right without step 7, the last I found out. So I have to do my part. And my part is that as I ask God to remove, and only he has the power to do that, with all the power I get from God and all the will I have to try to practice the opposite of the defect that I ask God to remove. For example, if I ask God to remove my selfishness, then I have to ask God for the strength and use all the power I have to be unselfish. If I ask God to remove my dishonesty, then with all the strength God gives me and all the will I have to be honest. And as I began to do this, with all those things that I found objectionable in my 4th column, all those defects of character, very slowly over a period of time, I begin to change my stock and trade. I begin to change my thinking. The old ideas were cast to one side, and a new set of conceptions and motives began to dominate my thinking. And when my thinking changes, my action changes, and when my action changes, my life changes. So essentially, I have been reborn. Now, if I could just stay there, that would be okay. Because so far, through 1, 2, and 3, I begin to get right with God, and I begin to get right in the spiritual dimension. 4, 5, 6, and 7, I begin to get right with my thinking in the mental dimension. Now, that would be wonderful if I could just stay there and have to go no further. Because the next 2 steps are very, very humbling. However, if I don't get right with the world and its people, resentment is going to come back. That's going to block me off from God. The insanity is going to return. I'm going to get restless, irritable, and discontented. And for me, when I get to that state, I think it is a sense of ease and comfort that comes at once. So it's very important for me to make a list of those people that I injured, which I took off of the 1st column of my inventories, and become willing to make amends to them, and then to make direct amends to these people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Very, very important for me in all of these steps to have guidance, because step 9 is to right the wrong, not the relationship. I'm not out there to fix my relationship with you or anybody else. If that happens as the result of this, great. But I have to share with you, there were many people to whom I made amends that I didn't want to repair the relationship. You follow? So that's not the purpose. It's to right the wrong. So I've gone through this process, as my book says on page 25, steps 4 through 9, and there's a successful consummation to this process, a completion. And a completion is a personality change sufficient to recover, as is evidenced by the 12 steps on page 83 and 84. If you look at those 12 promises on 83 and 84, you will see they all have to do with my thinking. Not my physical dimension, but with my thinking. And our book says these promises will always materialize if I work for them. Through the first 9 steps, I've been put back into the design for living that God created for me in the first place, because we're all born as tri-dimensional people. Now I begin to get right. My instincts begin to get restored to true purpose. It's a wonderful, wonderful feeling to experience that. It's so wonderful that I may say to myself, phew, I did a lot of work. You know, my book says to rest 1 hour after the 5th step. I did that. I looked at 6 and 7. I went out and made these amends. Maybe I could take a month off. It's a lot of work I've done. Something that I learned is that there's a universal law that nothing ever stays the same. Either I'm progressing or regressing. Either I'm going forward or I'm going backward. Nothing stays the same. My book, in its infinite wisdom, because I believe the big book is God-directed, gives me 3 steps that allow me to continue this process of 4 through 9 on a daily basis. It boggles my mind, truly, that this was created in such a fashion. My book says that I have to continue to set right any new mistakes I make along the way. So there's an implication that I'm going to make new mistakes. How freeing that is! I don't have to be perfect. My whole life, I wanted to be perfect, and because I knew I couldn't meet that expectation, I did very little. Now my book says we have to continue to set right any new mistakes. What a beautiful promise. We've entered the world of the Spirit. Through the first 9 steps, in my 10th step, I entered the world of the Spirit. There's an implication that I got to do some more work. If I just enter this room, there's an implication that I got to take more action to get over here. It's the same thing in the spiritual realm. I've entered the world of the Spirit. My next function, my next job, is to grow. Not maintain, as people say 10, 11, and 12 are, but to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Now, I'll tell you what that means to me. I understand that through these first 9 steps and doing my daily spiritual discipline, that I need God more than ever. Because there is some sort of temptation here or there to say, I've come this far, now I got it. Now I know what to do. No. I have a new employer. I still need to get my assignments. I still need to know the role that he assigns to me on a daily basis. Once I understand that, I become more effective. Why? Because I stop doing those things that I did while I was playing God. My book says it doesn't work. I stop controlling. I try to stop or be at least minimal in my expectations of people or things. I've wasted a lot of time on trying to do what I didn't have the power to do, mainly control other people. I was the self-seeker when trying to be kind. I would charm you to death, providing I got what I wanted. And the minute I felt I couldn't get it any longer, boom, that was the end of that. My book says on a daily basis that I continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And this is what I did in my 4th step. Amazing. I know how to do it. When these crop up, I ask God at once to remove them. And I learned how to do that in 6 and 7. I discuss it with someone immediately. And I learned how to do that in my 5th step. And if I've harmed anyone, I make amends quickly. Let me tell you what I used to do. I used to carry these negative things in my life, selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, self-seeking, inconsideration, I used to carry these all day. This is how I ruled my life, by this defective thinking. Today, I no longer have to do that. I have a tool that when I experience this, I stop. It's almost like, I'll never forget, I bought a car in 1999. And it's one of these safety kind of cars, you know. It has a lot of them warnings in there. And if you don't put the gas cap on right, because of an emission thing, the check engine light comes on. And I got very frightened. It's a new vehicle. So I go to the manual, and the manual says, go to the dealer right away. Well, I have a check self light in my head. When I experience selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, the check self light comes on. My manual says, do a 10 step. You understand? And I do the 10 step. Invariably, whenever I'm doing the wrong thing, I know it. And you know why I know it? Because God dwells within me, and if God dwells within me, I know right from wrong. So now I have a tool. When I'm experiencing resentment, dishonesty, selfishness, fear, I stop and I take inventory, and I find out what the problem is. I find out what the character defect is, because I'm not going to feel this unless one of these character defects come up. I ask God at once to remove it. Also giving me the strength to practice the opposite of the defect or defects I ask Him to remove. I discuss it with someone immediately. And I must confess there are times when there was nobody to discuss it with. So I have a good conversation with God. And I make amends quickly if I've harmed anyone. This whole process takes 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 15 minutes. And I don't have to carry this around all day long. Then I resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help. If I'm in self, I can't help anybody. And again, the wisdom, love and tolerance of others is my new code. When I came into AA, I was very good at taking those steps off the wall and practicing them in my life the way I saw fit. And what I got was an off-the-wall program. And my life reflected that, because for 20 months in AA, I was off the wall. See, the problem with taking the steps off the wall and using them in my life is that I didn't look for the instructions. And the instructions are in the book. Something else that I heard that also confused me about step 10 is that I do it at night before I go to sleep. Well, I don't get into much trouble at night anymore before I go to sleep. So I don't need to be doing a 10 step then, usually. I need a daytime walking around step, not a bedtime step. My difficulty happens when I interact with other human beings. That's when I need this step. If I confront somebody at 9 o'clock in the morning and I don't like what they say or do, and I start to replay that, at 11 o'clock, you don't look at me the right way, and I still have that feeling from 9 o'clock in the morning, and now I'm double resentment. You follow what I mean? And by 1 o'clock, I'm looking for a drink. I don't have to do this anymore. I have my tool. I have my 10-step tool. I take it out of the toolbox, and I use it. And when I begin to use this on a daily basis, my book promises me that alcohol will be removed from my life. It'll be removed from my life on a daily basis. Sanity will return. Unbelievable. In step 2, I came to believe that God could restore me to sanity. I've done some work, and sanity will have returned. And as the result of sanity being returned, I'll see the truth about alcohol and I'll recoil from it as I would a hot flame. Instead of putting my hand in and saying, maybe it won't burn me, it's a different oven. No. I recoil from alcohol as from a hot flame. This step also promises me that I'll be placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I think about the commercial, insurance commercial. You're in good hands with Allstate. I'm in good hands with the Almighty. It's an amazing feeling to be safe and protected, to walk anywhere I want to walk and not have to look behind me any longer. Who's there? Who's there? Who's going to get even with me? I don't have to do that anymore. The problem has been removed. It does not exist for me any longer, provided, as a condition, I keep in fit spiritual condition. Why would I not want it? Why did I drink alcoholically for 19 years? Because I wanted to be a horse's rear end? No. Because I wanted to go to AA? Absolutely not. I drank because it worked. Why would I remove myself from society, from a substance, unless it was doing something for me? Then it began to do things to me, and I still drank as if it was doing something for me. Dr. Silkworth says, at a certain point, I cannot differentiate the true from the false. Smart man like me couldn't see the truth about a liquid. Unbelievable. That has been removed from my life for today. And I'm very, very grateful for that. It's like God came into my head and took out that obsession to drink. But when God did that, there's an empty space in my head. Had to be filled with something. And it was filled with the obsession to stay sober. I need to stay sober at any expense, including people, some of them who I might love. This has been a beautiful experience for me, this 10 step. And again, it's easy to let up on this program and rest on my laurels. Now, what are my laurels? What I've done up until this point, to get to this point. Yesterday's prayer meditation, yesterday's meetings, yesterday's 12-step work. Those are my laurels. And when I begin to think about it, that makes sense, because yesterday's alcohol never got me drunk today. So it stands to reason that yesterday's spiritual work or yesterday's meetings are not going to keep me sober today. I got to tell you what I get a kick out of. And again, I only speak for myself. I get a kick out of people saying, I got to go to 2 or 3 meetings a day because I'm going away and I got to get the meetings in the bank. You understand? I mean, there are people that really believe that they could bank up their meetings. Never work with alcohol. I don't know how it's going to work for meetings. My book says, as the result of the 10th step, I get my will back. Imagine that? Because now it's the proper use of will. I bring the vision of God's will into all of my activities. So in step 10, I get my will back. In step 3, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I've done some things between 3 and 10, and I got my will back. I got my thinking back. Because now it's the proper use of my thinking. This has been the kind of step that on a daily basis relieves me of anxiety, relieves me of stress, and keeps me fit. But that's not all. All human beings, as far as I know, are born with 5 senses in which I gather most of the information that I've accumulated in my lifetime. In my particular case, 4 of them are in my head, and that's not a good place, let me tell you. But you know, I was thinking how my eyes deceive me. I mean, I shave my head and I look in the mirror and it seems very smooth and there's no stubble or anything. But once I touch it, I can feel it. So my eyes deceive me. A lot of what I hear, I put my own perception to, and it's not actually what was said. So that deceives me as well. I have the ability, through this program, to develop what our book calls a vital sixth sense. The ability to access God's power, God's love, God's way of life. Our book says that deep down inside every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. So that means God dwells inside of me. Wherever I go, God goes. He don't leave me. I may leave him, but he doesn't leave me. So I have this power within me to access anytime I want. So I have all the knowledge, all the power, all the love that I need to get through any given situation in my life. The only question is, am I willing to look within? That's the question. My book gives me a step that consists of three spiritual disciplines, which if I apply on a daily basis, will take which was once a spiritually bankrupt individual and enable me to access God's power, God's love, and God's way of life. It's an incredible thing. Bill does this on two pages in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew two prayers coming into AA. One I learned as a child, now I lay me down to sleep. Most of us are familiar with that one. I don't want to pray about if I die before I wake. I don't want, you know, I was a dead man walking for a lot of years. And the other one, some of you may identify with this, dear Lord, please get me out of this scrap. This time I mean it. I'm never doing it again. I'm never doing it again. But I would do it again. There's a scripture that I love. It says something like this. When you come and pray to me, I will hear you. When you search for me, you will find me if you seek me with all your heart. If you seek me with all your heart. After how it works, the letter C is God could and would if he was sought. And we're talking about step two. Step 11 starts out with sought through prayer and meditation to improve, not to maintain, but to improve our conscious contact with God. I'm still seeking God in the 11th step. And God will be there if I seek him with all my heart. Praying only for knowledge of his will for us, his will, and the power to carry that out. My book tells me what I need to do before I retire at night. Constructively review my day. See, that's what I do. That's the inventory I do at night is my 11th step. My 10th step I do all day long. I continue to watch. I think about years ago, I don't know if they still have it. I remember in Manhattan, they used to have these watchmen, and they used to walk around, and they used to have a flashlight and a key, and they'd have to turn something. I don't even know what it was, but I would see them turning it. I was too drunk to ask them. You know, I see them turning it, you know. I guess that was their way of showing whoever it is they work for that they were doing. They were watching. That's what I have to do. I have to continue to watch for these things that separate me, that eclipse God's will from my life, God's power from my life. Through step 11, at night, I constructively review my day. Now, that was a breath of fresh air, because I don't know if your experience was like mine, but I would lay down at night, sober, newly sober, and I would think about the things I did during the day, and I say, you fool, you moron, you so-and-so, I rip myself apart. That's destructively reviewing my day. My book says that I'm trying to see the truth, because once I see the truth, I know where I stand, and once I know where I stand, I can call God and ask him to remove, give me the strength to replace. Do I owe an apology? Do I owe an apology to anybody? Is there something that I need to say to somebody? If there is, I need to do that. Was I kind and loving toward all? I fall short there every day. What could I have done better? Am I thinking of myself all the time? Or am I thinking what I could do for other people? These are questions, there are seven of them, that I have to ask myself. And I do that. And my book warns me that if I fall short, not to drift in morbid reflection. Don't beat myself up, because that would diminish my usefulness to others. That's my job today, is to fit myself to be of maximum service. And if I beat myself up, I can't be fit. So it tells me what to do at night and bring whatever it is that's negative to God and ask what corrective measures are necessary. And I lay my head on the pillow and I sleep. There are very few nights during the course of the year that I don't go to sleep almost at once after I do this work. It tells me what to do in the morning. It says, when I awake on the way to the office in my car, on awakening, what does that mean? On awakening, I look at the 24 hours ahead. You know, I ask God to direct my thinking. That's what I do. I have a period of quiet time with God, quiet communion with God. And I'm pretty good today. I'm blocking out the chatter. Thank God, I'm able to do that. And I get right with God. And I ask Him for the strength, the inspiration, an intuitive idea if I face indecision. I pray for people in the morning. Some people who I've had a hard time with. Some people who aren't feeling well. Some people who are sick in self. Makes me feel good to do that. Nobody knows that, but I know that. And I conclude my period of meditation with a prayer that I be shown all through the day what my next step is to be, and to be given the strength to work through any difficulty I might encounter. When I woke up in the morning, when I was drinking, the first thing I used to do was curse God for allowing me to wake up. And I was the kind of guy who in my bedroom, I hated daylight because I knew I had to live with me for 10 or 12 or 14 hours. I used to have tin foil on the windows. And on top of the tin foil, I had towel. And on top of the towel, I had a Venetian blind. And on top of the Venetian blind, I had a drape. I hated daylight. I used to curse God for allowing me to wake up. Today, the first thing I do is I say, Dear God, thank you for allowing me to wake up and giving me a beautiful night's sleep, because He always does. I pray for the strength to see the truth about the drink, and there's a list of a couple of other things throughout the day. And please put somebody in my life who is suffering from my dis-ease, because I know what it's like to be at dis-ease. I say that every day. I came back from Pompano, Florida in May of 85, and I had this information. But it took 2 more years and then some before I applied it to my life. Because even with this information, I was like a 3 or 4 stepper. You know what I mean? I admit I was powerless. I came to believe, I made a decision, and I was helping the world, especially females. I was good like that. Then I had a crisis in 1987 where, and I'm sober now 4 years, where I wanted to go out and buy a gun and suck the barrel. And I woke up in the morning, like 3:30 in the morning. I don't know if you've ever experienced this headache between your temples that is just indescribable. And this was in October, and I would say the beginning of November, I don't remember when, but at some point between October and November, I picked up the Big Book one morning, about 3 in the morning, and I looked at what to do on awakening. And I did that. I'll never forget this. And I went back to sleep. And I remember what time I woke up, but I said, wow, that's pretty good. And that night, I took the Big Book out before I went to bed, and I did that, and I went to sleep. And the next morning, I woke up, and I slept a little longer, and I did the same thing. And I've been doing it every day from 1987, thank God, until the present, with the exception of 2 days, and I'll share that with you. In 1993, I had a sinus infection. And I went to the doctor, and they gave me an antibiotic for which I was allergic to, and I had a reaction. And I went back to this doctor, and he gave me a shot of cortisone, which really tore up my stomach. And I was itching because I had a rash. And he said, I want you to go to the pharmacy and get Benadryl. And I went to the pharmacy and I got the Benadryl. And I took as prescribed, I forget, one or two every 6 hours. And then after that 6 hours, I took another one or two. And then I couldn't wait for the next 6 hours to go by. And I tell you the compulsive individual I was. It came in a foil package. And what I did was I emptied out all the pills into a vial so I wouldn't have to hassle with the foil package. You know what I mean? In a day of doing this, I was insane. I was in, and I didn't know what it was, and I wanted to drink. I wanted to drink. Just so happened that I called my friend Merton, God bless him, wherever he is, and I told him what happened. And he said, tell me what's going on with you. And I told him. And he says, stop taking the Benadryl. So I stopped taking the Benadryl. And within 3 or 4 hours, it was amazing. But you know what I got from that? The most important thing in my life today is not drinking. It's my relationship with God. You don't realize it until you don't have it. It's like, I don't know if you've ever experienced cutting a finger where you can't use it. You never realize how important one finger is until you can't use it. You understand? I never realized how important God was until I was disconnected. It gave me a whole different perspective of my relationship with God. My book also tells me what to do when I face indecision. It doesn't say to beat myself up and labor over it. Bring it to God, relax and take it easy. The right answer will come. And after a while, I'll be surprised the answers that I get. It may be go here, call this one, do that. You follow what I'm saying? But I get the answer. It reminds me, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but you lose a set of keys and it drives you crazy. And you go in the same pocket 6 times, you know it's there. You pick up the sofa cushion 40 times. You know, you go underneath, you know, and you know it's there. And then finally, out of frustration, you say, the heck with this. Dear God, please take this from me. What happens 15 minutes later? You're led right to them. You understand? If it works with something as simplistic as keys, it could work with anything if I'm willing to work it. But I have to be careful because still being inexperienced with this, I may pay for it in all absurd ways. I may think I'm getting God's will when I'm getting self-will convoluted as God's will. Very, very important that I share with somebody who is along the same path. Bill says in the 12 and 12, it's very dangerous to go it alone in spiritual matters. Mm-hmm. My book also tells me that I may face agitation. I may be doubtful. It tells me to pause. Again, pray. Ask for the right thought or action. If I'm asking, I got to meditate. I got to receive. I was always good at giving out, never good at receiving. I have to learn how to receive. So now I can receive. Reminds me, when I was lost in my vehicle, which I was quite often, I never would stop and ask for directions from anybody. I remember I was in Mexico with a friend of mine, and I traveled the same area about 3 hours in a circle. Today, when I'm doubtful, what do? I ask for direction. It's the same thing. I ask for direction. My book says that we're undisciplined. Now, that's an understatement. My book. There's an interesting statement that Bill makes in the 12 and 12. He says, when these three disciplines are logically related and interwoven, not one or the other, but when they are logically related and interwoven, they provide an unshakable foundation for life. Unshakable. How did you feel when alcohol was your friend and you had a problem? Took a drink, man. Hey, cool. That'll be all right. Unshakable. Now I have something that provides the same thing, but there's a difference. I'm not getting locked up by doing my 11-step. I'm not winding up in an emergency room. I'm not winding up in fights. I'm not waking up scraped all over the place, wounds without cause, as Solomon said. Right? I'm getting the benefit of what I got, and then some, from when alcohol was my friend. I'm doing this a while now. This has never turned on me. This has never, ever turned on me. My book makes a statement that, if I allow it, could really make me angry. It says, now we need action. Because faith without works is dead. And it talks about the 12th step. I'm tired already. I don't want any more action. I want to take it easy. But you know, taking it easy is like complacency. And complacency is like coasting. And I've never seen a vehicle coast successfully uphill. Never. So I know that if I'm going to take it easy, eventually, I'm going to go backwards. We have a beautiful step called step 12. It's a multiple-part step. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. So it's pretty explanatory. Having had a spiritual awakening, as the work I've done on the previous steps, this is what I carry to the alcoholic who is still suffering. And then I have to practice these principles in all my affairs. In Appendix 2, Bill calls a spiritual awakening a personality change sufficient to recover. And in the 12 and 12, Bill says there are probably as many spiritual awakenings as there are people. But they have some things in common. I'm able to do, feel, and believe that which I could not do on my unaided will and resources alone. It's a gift that amounts to a new state of consciousness. A new state of consciousness. Reborn. I'm reborn. Now, I have to ask myself, do I fit that criteria? Am I able to do things today that I've been unable to do before? Well, I'm able to get through the day without a drink. And because I'm able to get through the day without a drink, I'm able to be here with you wonderful people and do many things that I was unable to do before. So yeah, I meet that criteria. Do I feel things today that I've been unable to feel before? I used to feel restless, irritable, and discontented. I used to feel resentful and full of fear. I don't feel that way anymore. For the most part, I'm happy, joyous, and free. I am at ease today. Today I know the difference between love and lust. Never knew that before. And also, I feel God's love. And before, I always felt God's wickedness. I'm going to get you. I don't feel that any longer. So I meet that criteria. And I believe things today that I never believed before. I believe that most human beings are good people. Sometimes they do bad things. But I also realize when they do bad things, they're sick in self. I also believe that God is a loving, unconditional, generous, caring power. And that any person, myself included, who's ready to go back home, he's willing to take them in with open arms. I remind myself of the prodigal son. The prodigal son said to his father, "Hey, Pop, I'm tired of living on this farm. I want some excitement. I want what's coming to me." And the father said to the kid, "You know, it's a rough world out there. I don't know if you're prepared. I can handle it." So the father gave him his piece of change. And before long, the big book says, he squandered his substance on riotous living. Do you think that's any different then than it was today. He squandered his substance on riotous living. And he came to a bottom. He was living on a pig farm, sleeping with the pigs, and he was a little Jew boy. You understand what I mean? You hear what I'm saying? He came to believe that, hey, I'm powerless over this. I got to go back to my father. And he made a decision. And then he took the action, and he went back to his father. And they had a whole feast for him. His father said, he was dead, now he is alive. He is lost, now he is found. That's me. I was dead. Till I was 37 years old, I was dead. And then what happened? I came into AA. And I found myself. It's an amazing thing, really. So what is the message that I have to carry? I've had this awakening, I'm able to do, feel, and believe. The message I have to carry to the alcoholic who still suffers is, are you restless, irritable, and discontented? Have you been coming to AA for a while and you still feel like drinking? You still feel you don't fit in? Are you still doing things at home, at the job, with friends that you used to do while you were drinking? Are you prey to misery and depression? You feel you're useless? Are you full of fear? You feel you're of no use to anybody? Have you come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as you had been living it, sober? Have you? Well, I know how you feel, buddy. Because I felt that way too. In Alcoholics Anonymous for 20 months, I felt that way. But you don't have to feel that way anymore. And I'll show you what I did. And if you're willing to do what I did, you won't feel that way anymore. And then when somebody approaches you, you'll know what to do for them. I carry this message of the awakening from the first 11 steps. What blows my mind is that I'm going to be generous and I'm going to say 75% of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous haven't had this experience and they're carrying their message. That blows my mind. See, that's the great tragedy. That's the great tragedy. That people in AA are dying from a misguided message. You hear what I'm saying? Misguided. And you try to give these people a message, and they rebuff you, they repel you, they think that you're cocky, they think that you're a know-it-all, they think you're intellectual. No, this is my experience. You follow what I mean? We can go back to 75% rate of recovery, like they had between 39 and 55. With meetings like this and workshops that this group does and other groups, we can go back. I can take you by the hand and bring you through the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can show you your truth, and I can lead you to a relationship with God which will solve your problem. It won't help you. It won't enable you. It will solve your problem. The only thing you have to provide is willingness. We could do the rest. We can. Now the most difficult part is step 12 for me. Practicing these principles in all my affairs. Principles. Whenever Bill talks about the principles, it's the steps. AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in nature, which when practiced as a way of life can expel the obsession to drink. 12 steps. How do I carry this beautiful message outside of the rooms? An hour a day, I'm Mr. AA. I love you, hopefully you love me, we're grooving. What about at ShopRite? Express 8 items. I'm late. You got 15 items. I counted every one of them. Cash. You're already fiddling with your checking, with your checkbook. How do I deal with that there? You understand? That's practicing these principles. How about when I'm driving my car and I'm in a 25 mile an hour zone, and you're going 25, and it ticks me off because it's 25 out there, but we got to be going a little faster, and you can't even see over the steering wheel. Mm. I can't even give you the salute. You can't even see me. Can I practice these principles there? How about on a job where I'm 8 hours a day? Can I practice these principles there? What about at home, 12, 14, 16 hours a day? Can I practice these principles at home? Can I come to believe that I'm powerless over my family? Can I make a decision to turn their life over to the care of their God? Can I take inventory and see the insanity within me that's trying to run their lives? Can I share this with another person? Can I ask God to remove these things that are creating the actions that are making my family and friends and my employees or employers or the people in the supermarket miserable by my reaction to them? Can I make amends to these people when I see I've done them wrong? Can I continue to take stock on a daily basis so I don't do these things? Or if I do, I could promptly admit it and make my amend to them. Can I do this on a daily basis? That's practicing these principles in all my affairs. The promise that I have from this program is that I could be happy, joyous, and free 24 hours a day if I choose to. But I am responsible once I have this information. I am responsible for how I feel, what I say, what I do, and how I think. I can't blame anybody on the face of this earth for my lot in life. I own that now. I am responsible. Once I cast dispersion or transfer blame to anybody else, I'm in bondage to that person. Once I accept responsibility, I'm free. That's what I want to be. I was in bondage to alcohol and self for 37 years. 37 years old. 19 of them to booze, big time. Now I have an arch in which I walk a free person at last. On a daily basis, I have to ask myself, are the stones properly in place? Have I skimped on the cement put in the foundation? Have I tried to make mortar without sand? Am I still doing the right thing on a daily basis, dear God? That's my responsibility. I can't have people say, Howard, did you do your amends? That's my responsibility. Are you going to go to the meeting? That's my responsibility. Are you helping with service? That's my responsibility. I got to do that. This is about growing up. I'm so happy that I was depraved because that depravity brought me into a fellowship, which brought me to a program, which brought me to my God. That's an amazing thing for a man like me. God bless you and thank you for allowing me to be here.
Speaker's commitment here, we have a little card that we give to you in appreciation and thank you for coming here. And I want to thank you because you are a special person in my life, and I'll always remember you forever because God put you in my life to teach me your 12-step work that you've done that has changed my life. And I saw what you did, and I wanted what you had. I'm doing the best I can to do what you did, so I can get what you have, so I can carry the message also. I thank you very much.
Thank you.